Pamela Wilson, as I mentioned. She's an expert in the field of caregiving and has provided, she's an expert in the field of caregiving and has personally helped thousands of families and professional caregivers since Y2K year 2000 in her career as an advocate, a care navigator, and as an educator. Through her company, The Care Navigator, she's an advocate and service provider in the role of guardian, power of attorney, care manager, and transition specialist. I want to give Pam a warm welcome. Pam, how you doing?
I am fabulous. Thank you. How are you, Ted?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Sorry you had to wait a couple of extra minutes. I just had to thank our radio partners that play the podcast. But I'm happy to have you here.
Thank you.
So I'm not sure where to get started because Miss Christy Hughes was so kind enough to share with me your story. I'm just going to turn the mic down on my end. I have a few questions, but why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners, tell us who you are, all the good work that you do, and then we'll go in with a few questions.
Okay. So, Pamela Wilson, I serve as an advocate for caregivers, and a caregiver really can be any age, so it's a parent raising young children, it's older parents taking care of their grandparents, it's children taking care of older parents, so just a wide range of situations. And what I like to talk about a lot is, in advocacy, is that you have to speak up. And so throughout my life, I've been a family caregiver, I've lost both parents, a brother and a sister, and I've been doing this work since 2000. And from a caregiving perspective, it's so important to speak up, ask questions, advocate for yourself, and most of all, not feel guilty about what you can't do. So when I talk to caregivers, that I always bring that up because it's so significant to what we do day in and day out.
So true, Pam, so true. I want to get into your new book. Well, it's been out since October, I believe, if I'm correct. The Caregiving Trap, Solutions for Life Unexpected Changes. It basically arms caregivers with the knowledge to advocate on behalf of their loved ones and provide advice on how the caregiver can maintain a healthy lifestyle too. So let's get into your book on inspirations for writing it.
Inspirations for writing it actually came from the people that I provide care for. So my older adults, my younger adults who need care, and the caregivers. So the people who need the care always say to me, oh my gosh, I didn't realize life was going to be like this. I'm sick. I have all these things wrong with me. I take these pills. I feel like my life is a trap. On the other hand, you've got the people doing the caregiving who say, oh my gosh, who knew that I'd have to take care of a sick child, an older parent, a spouse, somebody with Alzheimer's? This is not the way I wanted my life to be, and I feel trapped. And so the book does both perspectives of, if you're a caregiver, how do you make sure that you're taking care of yourself so that you can take care of your loved one? And if you're on the other end, the person needing care, how do you work with families, family members who, you may feel guilty about your kids giving up time to take care of you, or you're a young parent and you've got to work and you feel like you should be with your kids, doing things. So it's both perspectives and how to work through this and be able to talk about it, because a lot of people can't talk about it.
Right. So, I with most of our guests that we have on Late Night Parents, I use myself as an example. For one, my dad is 84, but he still gets around. He drives. He's going to Atlantic City and here, there, he has a new girlfriend, and I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm smiling right now because I'm like, okay, when mom passed away in 2006, I was kind of wondering like, oh my goodness, what's going to happen? So it's just the opposite, but in situations like that, what are the key questions that come up to you when you have that aging parent? And you have, whether it's a daughter or a son, and they have their own family, what are some of the issues that pop up? And let's just say the elderly parent isn't able to move in with the son or the daughter, and they have to be the care provider for that parent. What are some of the, I guess, stopgaps or pain points?
So the big things that come up is role. So if you've got a parent, and in a lot of situations it really isn't best if they move in with you, because sometimes that brings a whole host of other issues. But let's say that you're taking care of a parent and you've got brothers and sisters. You know, it's the conversation about, okay, I can do Saturday. What night can you do? You know, I can pay bills. I can pick up groceries. I can get medications. So just kind of like dividing the work up for taking care of a parent so that it all doesn't fall on one child. And if you're the only child, then it's talking to the parent about hiring outside help to provide
right.
that care, because one person really cannot do it all. They can't, as much as they want to. It's not possible, not good for their health.
Right. So I have a question here. How might parents with a disabled child manage and support a normal family life when there are non-disabled children in the family? Is this even possible?
It is possible, you know, but what comes up a lot is guilt. So the parents will feel guilty. Let's say you've got an autistic child and there's a healthy child. Parents a lot of times will feel guilty because they're spending so much time with that autistic child and they don't feel like they're giving enough time to the other child. So it's kind of including the autistic child in the life of the other child. And it's being honest and talking about it and saying, you know, this is not it. We realize it's a difficult family situation. And, you know, we realize that, you know, sometimes we have to spend more time with, you know, your sister or brother who's disabled. We want to give you equal time, but sometimes we need some extra patience. So it's in a family just being able to talk about it. And, you know, as parents, seeking support. You know, if you want to do something, is there somebody that can, you know, come and take care of your disabled child for a weekend so that you can spend time with the healthy child? It's kind of balancing act, just as it is with taking care of parents. You know, you've got kids and parents. How much time do you spend with caregiving for the parent versus your healthy children?
That's true. I want to make everyone aware that we're speaking with Pam Wilson. But in a few days, it's April, and it's Autism Awareness Month. So in the month of May, it's Mental Health Awareness Month. So we got to keep those two things in mind. But my second question is, what insights might be helpful for parents of disabled children who feel separated or isolated from general society because they have a child who's different?
You know, the first thing is don't let other people, and I don't want to say categorize because I hate to use that word, but the reality is you are going to lose some friends along the way. And if those people can't accept your life or accept your family the way it is, they're really not your friends. There's
right.
plenty of people out there who will be supportive and who will bend over backwards to be helpful and to embrace. So it's, in a sense, it's finding family similar to yours, because there are plenty of families out there with disabled children, with autistic children, who are more than happy to lend a hand, that you can embrace friendships with, become friends with. You know, sometimes it's just you've got to look around the corner to find those bright spots in life, and just don't give up. You know, a lot of people will say, oh, well, you're just, you know, you're stuck with that child. What a horrible thing to say to somebody. You're
that
stuck
is.
With that child, you know.
Oh, wow.
So there's people on the outside who judge because they have no idea what the life of this family is like. And you've got to just ignore those people.
Gotcha. So I guess my next question is, how might others view parents and disabled children whose behaviors may not be viewed as appropriate?
You know, I can liken that to older adults with Alzheimer's, okay? So children just say what they want. So do older adults with Alzheimer's. And so I have a friend who has an autistic child, and what they've come up with is the child's name is Taylor. So they call them Taylorisms.
Okay.
So Taylor will just say what she thinks. You know, she will be walking down the street and say, man, that person's fat. Man, they're ugly. Man, they're this. Man, they're that. And, you know, my friends used to be embarrassed, but now they just kind of look at each other and they're like, Taylor, you know. So it's almost like within your family, you've got to accept it and you've got to find the humor. You know, other people may not find the humor because they don't know the inside story. But as a family, you've got to be able to find the humor in all the crazy stuff that happens, because it's going to happen, and you don't want it to drive yourself crazy. You don't want to feel guilty about it. It's just, you have to be able to laugh sometimes about crazy things.
You know, before I even ask my next question, I wanted to ask you, so for personal or professional experiences, could you give 5 tips for caregivers?
Sure. So the first one is, and I'll go back to the one I just talked about, find the humor. You've got to find the humor in situations, you know, regardless of how crazy they may be. And I'll give a quick example. I had an older client who had to give a urine sample. She couldn't do it. So we're like 2 ladies laughing in the bathroom, and she's saying, man, it's hell to get old. I used to be able to do this, and now I got to have you hold the cup. And we were laughing hysterically in the bathroom. So you've got to be able to find the humor in even the most crazy situations, because if you don't, you're going to lose your mind. The second one is, you've got to be honest about the situation. You know, a lot of people we can get to a point where we're in denial and we don't want to talk about things, or we're embarrassed, or it's like, oh my gosh, what if somebody finds out, you know, I have an autistic child, or my parent has Alzheimer's. So it's just being honest with yourself and with your family and not hiding it. So I've had people with autistic children almost want to shelter the child from society, because they're like, well, if we take them out, what if somebody looks at them wrong or says something or whatever? We can't shelter our family members, and we shouldn't. It's, you know, people should be able to be out in society, and if people don't accept them, then that's the other person's problem. It's not our family's problem. But that takes a little bit of courage, and so courage is the next one. It's like, don't be afraid to talk about what's going on in the family. Don't be afraid to ask questions. So many people see healthcare providers and doctors as God, and they're really not. And you have to be able to challenge what they're telling you, to be able to understand what's going on. And that kind of falls into the tip about knowledge. You know, read books, investigate, join support groups and committees and things like that. The more that you know about your situation, regardless of whether it's a developmental disability, autism, Alzheimer's, aging, the more that you know, the better you can advocate and the better that you can take care of your family and your loved ones.
Perfect, perfect. So I do have 2 other questions, but one, I had one of my good friends was local. Their parent developed Alzheimer's, and so she had a brother who was, I'm going to say, about 200 or 300 miles away. So she was in New York. Her brother was in D.C., Maryland area, and I just noticed, I just saw how it just took a toll on her.
Mm-hmm.
Just the day-to-day struggles, and where, you know, just coming from her viewpoint, I would sit and talk with her, and you know, just to allow her to vent. For let's say, you know, children that don't have siblings, what you know, words of wisdom could you offer to them?
A couple. So one is, find a support group. A lot of people are afraid of support groups because you kind of see the future. So you might have a parent with early Alzheimer's, and there might be some people in that group with late-stage Alzheimer's. And so you might see the future, which may not be a pleasant thought. But the people in those support groups really can provide support. The other thing I talk to is, go see a counselor. You know, a lot of people are afraid. They think, oh, my gosh, if I go to a counselor, people are going to think I'm crazy. No, if you go to a counselor, you're actually very intelligent, because you're getting yourself some much-needed help. Families have to be able to talk to people about this. Caregivers have to have somebody to talk to. Fortunately, your friend had you as a sounding board. It's important to be able to talk about it, and especially not feel guilty about it. So many caregivers are afraid to talk about it because they say, well, you know, everybody will think I'm horrible if I say how difficult it is to take care of my parent.
Right.
You're not horrible. It's a tough job.
It is.
And you've got to find help somewhere.
So true, so true. So I guess my next question is, what single support contributes to the overall caregiving situation that many individuals and most families find difficult to accept?
The first one is accepting help. So many families think that they have to do it themselves, and they'll do it to the point of exhaustion, or they'll do it to the point of frustration. So just the ability to go ask for help and accept help, whether it's from a volunteer organization, a support organization like the Autism Society, the Alzheimer's Society, mm-hmm. you know, paying a caregiver to come once a week. For caregivers, it's the idea of accepting help and embracing that help. So many just don't want to do it. Or, you know, if there's a financial issue, it's, okay, how are we going to pay for this? Medicaid exists. You know, some people are afraid
right.
of accessing public benefits. You cannot be afraid to get the help that you need.
It's true. That's true. So I think my next to last question is, how might caregivers survive without compromising their own physical and mental health?
Set boundaries. Most caregivers are horrible at setting boundaries. They will say yes to their own detriment. You will never hear a no, I can't do that. And
oh,
so
my goodness.
As a caregiver, it's important to say, you know what? I'd love to be able to do it, Mom, but I need some time on my own. You know, I can't be there Sunday night, but you know what? Tuesday night I can show up. So
right.
you've got to be able to say no and set some boundaries to protect your own health and well-being. And caregivers do not do that. They're the worst.
I tell you this much. I just received my copy of The Caregiving Trap, Solutions for Life Unexpected Changes. I'm so excited that I'm going to be able to jump into it this weekend and read it. Pam, if you could tell us, you know, and this segment, this part is about you, best ways to get in contact with you, your company, your book, your website, you know, best ways to get in contact with you on social media.
So we're on social media. The social media is The Care Navigator. My company website is thecarenavigator.com. There also is a caregiver support website called thecaringgeneration.com, and you can find the book at thecaregivingtrapbook.com.
And Pam, I want to give you a round of applause.